providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. As I spent the first three segments focused more on the resource sector, especially driving down some of the junior stocks, I want to take a step back and wrap up this first hour with more broad comments, trying to make sense of some of the market moves and also understanding some of the news events that I think some of the larger institutions are getting positioned for. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. He's a managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. And Mark, there are three main issues that we're going to talk about here that are more longer term issues and I think have a bit more impact in a longer term sense on broad markets. First things first, let's talk about the U.S. equity markets and the S&P. Following up on our conversation last Friday, you were outlining gap theory. And what gap theory says is you sell the, I believe it's the fourth gap in a row. And that's exactly what we had on Monday. The U.S. markets, the S&P, were consistently putting in daily gaps at the end of the last week. And then on Monday, we had that fourth gap in a row. And hey, true to form, the markets actually started to sell off, not aggressively, but just a little bit on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. They filled a lot of those gaps. And on Friday, curiously enough, we had a little gap higher. Now, Mark, give us a little summary of what this means for the overall outlook in your eyes for U.S. markets.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I think that it really played out as gap theory would have suggested. And a gap theory, it really works in markets in which the are limited in time. These markets, like the looking at, like, say, the NASDAQ futures or the S&P futures, these trading almost 24 hours a day, so you don't really see the gaps. But traditionally, and in like classic technical analysis, these gaps are important. And so what's happened now then is that, as you mentioned, we've come down, filled a couple of the gaps. And as we did, we found some support on Thursday at about a 50% retracement level of this month's gains. As we when we gap back higher on Friday, what bothers me is that we have to think about what kind of gap that is. And I suspect it's going to be what's called a normal gap, which means it's filled relatively soon, which could mean as early as Monday. So that's what I would be looking to do. I think that the strong recovery on Thursday, gap high opening on Friday, you should look for that top of that gap, excuse me, the bottom of the gap now comes in at around 34.89. So that's what I'd be looking to buy. And you can have, I think that a tight stop is warranted because if it should hold that area, and if it doesn't, it probably means we're in for a deeper pushback. So I like the stocks, and I think that what's driving the stocks is really the idea that one way or the other, the U.S. is going to get fiscal stimulus, and that interest rates stay low for a prolonged period of time. And so investors have little alternative to take some risk and buy equities.
So this is just the continued story of investors really not having anywhere else to put their money, there being a lot of money in the system, and U.S. markets continuing to look bullish?
Well, I'd say yes. There has been a recent study at one of the Federal Reserves, I believe it was the St. Louis Fed, who think that an explanation for the stock market is coming from people essentially discounting dividends in the future, which to try to understand why the growth stocks have done so much better than the value stocks. The Fed study makes the market seem more rational, if you will, if you assume that some of these tech giants are going to eventually pay sizable dividends. And that's what people are really trying to buy is discounting the future earnings stream.
But we've seen a recovery in some of these lagging sectors too. This recent bounce back in the markets haven't been just tech focused. So what does that mean?
Yeah, no, exactly. This is what the Federal Reserve points out. I think in their paper, it's just the focus on to try to understand this gap, this apparent gap between Main Street and Wall Street is to focus on the income stream that's anticipated by investors looking at things like dividend futures in effect.
All right, let's also talk about this second point. You even alluded to it there on one of your first answers, is the U.S. budget and the potential, almost the guarantee, really, of a fiscal package coming. But that fiscal package just continues to get delayed, and who knows when we're going to get it. It's definitely going to come after the election, at least that's what I think. But we also don't know the timing of that. But you look at the potential fiscal package and some of the rising yields that we've seen, especially in the U.S. How do you balance out these two factors?
Yeah, so we do see a rise in U.S. yields, though, even though we pulled back a little bit this week, 4 or 5 basis points in our 10-year, yields are still at the upper end of say, a 4 or 5 month trading range, really. I think people are looking at the U.S. deficit. And here's the amazing thing, I think, is we just reported at the end of last week a record budget deficit in the U.S. And you look at the IMF's projections, economist projections for next year, and the U.S., without the congressional package, we're still looking at, say, an 8% budget deficit next year. And if you look at the IMF data, like their forecast for growth, the U.S. economy will only grow about 3.1%. I say only because after this year, you'd expect a stronger rebound. And most other countries, except Japan, in terms of the G7 countries, are going to grow faster than the United States, according to the IMF. So I do think that there's this interesting issue happening with U.S. interest rates rising. And Europe has been very effective in talking their rates down. Not only talking their rates down, but by buying more bonds. And what's happened is that the net result of the backing up of U.S. bonds and the decline in European bonds and Australia bonds, that the interest rate differential has moved in the U.S.'s favor. And I'm watching this very closely. I tend to put a lot of weight on that in my understanding of the currency markets. And the dollar, as you know, firmed a bit this week as these rates have moved to a couple month highs, these rate differentials. So it's just worth paying attention to in the coming period of U.S. rates, again, relative to Europe and Australia.
So, Mark, is this a good thing that countries or even Europe broadly has been able to talk their rates lower?
I think that the challenge is that Europe is being hit for this second COVID surge that is, on a per capita basis, overtaking the United States. And this is going to hit their economies. And we'll see this possibly next week when we get the preliminary purchasing managers index for the month of October. And these new lockdowns, I think, is hitting an economy that already had lost some momentum. And so in some ways, this is a desired effect of having lower European interest rates to help their economies. And I just think the net effect of it is that you've got this a bit of a divergence. And in some ways, it's a bit of a contest. Of course, the U.S. wants to keep its rates down as well, judging from what the Federal Reserve says. So I think there's just an interesting flashpoint and something just to keep an eye on going forward.
One other interesting development in Europe, too, is Italy and the recent bonds that they have issued at 0%. Give us a little bit more color. You brought this up to me off mic. What's important here?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I mean, a country, Italy, who's notoriously has debt problems, and even a year ago, people were worried about their debt issues and their ability to service their debt. And here we are, well into 2020, with this big economic shock. And Italy sold 3-year bonds last week, and they didn't have to pay anything. In fact, because they were oversubscribed, the yield actually went off at slightly below zero. The 2-year yield is below zero already. But this is the first new bond being auctioned. It's quite remarkable, I think, just the amazing development and what this really means. And it's interesting, I think, partly for the extreme, but it's not just Italy that has record low bond yields now. Greece also has record low bond yields. Spain and Portugal are near record low yields. And this is, I think, this is a inter-European issue desirable from given the economic conditions. But it just seems to me so remarkable how we can go from Italy being in crisis to Italy being able to sell bonds with a zero coupon. And again, it was oversubscribed. And I know it's kind of interesting, like, who wants to buy these negative yielding bonds? I think to keep in mind what people do when they buy a negative yielding bond, they're just buying a price of a bond. And so by knowing that bonds can go negative, bond yields can go negative, it means the price can go higher. And many global fund managers, people who are managing our pension monies, if we have a global bond fund, these people, if they do not buy Italian bonds, they say, we're not going to buy Italian bonds with a negative yield or zero yield. If they don't do that, they will, especially recently, they will underperform their benchmark. And in this competition between asset managers, you underperform your benchmark, and the fund next to you, the woman portfolio fund manager next to you or the guy upstairs, they're going to get that incremental dollar coming into the asset markets. And so competitiveness sort of forces you to be to participate in these winning trades, if you will, in the fixed income market, in any asset market. I think Italy benefits from that. Most recently, it hasn't been the ECB that has been the big buyer, the euro system being the big buyer of Italian bonds. The Japanese, when Japan reports their balance of payments data, they report a country breakdown of the portfolio outflows. And it turns out that Japanese institutions in both July and August were record buyers of Italian bonds.
Mark, does this mean that the bond market is almost broken in a sense? If yields aren't rising because governments are capping them, if we're issuing 0% yielding bonds and there's that much demand for them, how does that all play into the big picture of what bond markets are usually used for investors?
Yeah, I think two things that come to mind. One is that people aren't buying these zero coupon bonds for the yield, obviously. They're buying them because they anticipate capital appreciation. So one thing, I don't know if broken was the right way I think about it, but I do think that the game has changed where bonds are not so much bought for the yield, but bought for capital appreciation. And I was saying before about that thing, about the Federal Reserve paper, they're talking about buying stocks for the yield, for the dividend. So it's like almost this bizarro kind of world. But the other thing that your question poses, I think, is are people getting paid for the risk that they're taking? And you don't really see that so much maybe in the sovereign bond market, especially in your sovereign bond market. But I think when you look at corporate bonds and the quality of the corporate bonds and the spreads between them and sovereigns, I think there's a real question that should be raised about if are you really getting paid for that extra risk you're taking?
Yeah. Oh, man. It's definitely a strange market that we're dealing with right now. Final point. One of the third main issue that you had in mind this week came out of Brexit, or, well, lack of any movement in Brexit. The EU had a summit. There was no compromise. They seem very much still at a standstill without any progress being made. What are you taking away from the developments this week?
Unfortunately, it's going to ruin my weekend because I'm going to have to watch for what they're going to say. It's still not 100% clear what's going to happen come Monday. The EU is saying that they've got negotiations between their chief representative, their chief negotiator, Barnier, and the UK chief negotiator, Frost. But the UK seems to be playing down this meeting. And so I have to watch before the markets open on Monday in Asia, what has been resolved. I suspect the talks will go on, but it'll be each time there's these little temper tantrums and little fits, I think that it makes it harder to overcome the personality issues. Because you think about the size of some of these issues, like the fishing. So the UK waters are used by EU fishermen, and they catch about 75% of the EU's catch comes from the UK waters. And on the other hand, something like 75% of the UK's catch gets exported to the EU. That whole market, that whole thing is worth something on the magnitude of $700 million. It's a lot of money for the individual fishermen and for that industry. But for the trade ties between the UK and the EU and the relative size of GDP, it just it seems like such a small issue that it would tell me that if they're stuck on this small issue, it must be because of some deeper problems they're having. And I think it's a question that they don't even see the same problem. It's like people talking at each other rather than to each other.
That is a good way of putting it. Unfortunately, it just seems like the markets have also grown numb to, well, what's going on with Brexit or the lack of any progress in Brexit. Mark, wrap us up with some of the data points, some of the news that you're going to be watching for in the next week or two that you think should be noted and might have some market implications.
Well, the first thing we're going to get while we're sleeping or very late Sunday night is China will be the first major country to report its Q3 GDP. And, you know, China looks like the only G20 country that might expand this year. Q2 growth in China was about 11.5%. That's quarter over quarter, 11.5%. And here in Q3, China is expected to report about 3.5% growth. The U.S. won't report its figures until later, a few weeks from now. And that was expected to show over 25% growth in Q3. That would be an annualized figure. The other big data point next week is going to be the PMI, these preliminary purchasing managers indexes, because we already know Q3 is behind us. What we're really interested in is how the economy they're doing in Q4. Given the flare-up of COVID in both the U.S. and Europe, I think we might be, it'll be probably more focused at, if it's going to be reflected, it'll be shown up in the service sector of the PMI, the service reading. On the other hand, before the weekend, the U.S. did report an unexpected drop in industrial production. And so we're going to be carefully watching how bad, or how much momentum, I should say, the economies have lost as we get into Q4.
All right, Mark, we're going to wrap it up there. It's always great having you on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing the three main aspects that you are watching when it comes to the markets, all that technical trading. That was important to note this week. And also this fiscal package, what it might look like. Those are two major factors that investors need to understand. But man, oh man, it's definitely a volatile market right now. Mark, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking time on this weekend show. Everybody else, thank you for tuning in. Please keep all the emails coming. Please listen to all the daily editorials I post during the week. And also, please keep sending me your questions on all the companies that I'm bringing on the show. It helps me follow up with the companies, and it helps me focus future interviews. Mark, everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.